Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 29th for the week of February 12th, 2007. The new Bourne Identity. Hey, everybody. This is Alex Lindsay, and I'm stepping in. Leo is out. We've got the usual suspects, John Foster.
Good evening, everyone. Or good morning, wherever you happen to be GMT-wise.
Scott Bourne.
Hey, I'm in San Francisco this time, so don't be gig harboring me.
Gig, and Merlin Mann.
I'm next to Scott Bourne, so don't be San Francisco-ing me.
So this is the first time I think Scott's been in the studio with us here. Oh, no,
second.
We did one
around the table and talked about Genesis.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
We haven't talked about Genesis in weeks.
They're on tour now.
Genesis is a rock band.
Yeah.
But they're on tour, minus Peter
Gabriel. Oh, do you know who's... Wait. I know this has nothing to do with the Mac.
First rat hole of the evening.
The Police are going on tour. That has something to do with the Mac. You know why it has something to do with a Mac? Sting uses a Mac.
Yeah.
I actually know that because a friend of mine does IT for Sting.
Do you realize how awesome they look for their age? Like, Andy Summers is not a young man. He was in The Animals.
He was 42 when the Police were around. Yeah. Andy Summers is
up in 84.
Right. Sorry. No. So Andy Summers got a mid 60s now.
Can I just say, after the Grammy thing, I mean, the performance was okay. It was fine. But I mean, more than anything, Stuart Copeland is still so hardcore.
Yeah.
I'm just here to say.
He was hardcore when he was in Oysterhead. It was one of the best performances I've ever seen a drummer do.
He's amazing.
It's Stuart Copeland and Neil Peart. I'm sorry, I'm still kind of an old...
We're going deep catalog on the Mac Music Show here, folks.
Let's come back and do a whole music episode. One long, pointless, non-Mac music.
Well, no, as long as the musicians use a Mac, then we can talk about them.
Yeah, we should have Mac using musicians that aren't actually on the show, but we're going to talk about them anyway.
So this weekend, lame.
Oh, for you! For those of you at home, lame is an MP3 encoder that doesn't violate the.
And now we have ruined the entire
Boswell
thing.
To my Johnson.
Okay. So, speaking of musicians and music, there's been a lot of different reactions. Okay, we didn't talk about it on this show, but we talked about it on some of the other shows related to Steve's letter to the industry. Basically laying out, Steve, I don't think we need to go into this in too much detail, but he basically said there are three options. We can
stay the course.
We can license Fair Play.
But that won't work.
Or we could just make everything DRM free.
I want to know one thing. As he gave this speech.
He just put it up there.
He on an aircraft carrier and did he have the words mission accomplished behind him? No. Just checking.
No, it was
no, because if he would have done that, he would have said, "Well, we're going to try this again. So,
anyway, he would have landed a custom van dressed as Elvis, maybe.
So he laid it out there.
And everybody said you first.
Well, I think that the situation is, I think he's also saying it has to be all or nothing. So, of course, this is a good chess play. I mean, the thing is that Apple's basically telling the four big companies that you have to release everything for free or we're not going to do anything, which gives them a fair bit of time because immediately Warner Brothers, the CEO of Warner Brothers or whatever, came up and said, well, he's crazy. You know, DRM is the way to go. Microsoft released another DRM option. This also, though, allows him to keep on pushing towards, in Europe, well, you shouldn't be paying attention to us. You should be paying attention to the record companies. Talk to them. Don't talk to us. Is it going to work?
I think it actually has a chance of working only because I think it's going to work in another way, Alex. We haven't talked about the negotiation strategy here that Apple might be employing. Because keep in mind, there's a lot of pressure on Apple to charge more for the songs in the next round. A lot of these licenses are up for renegotiation. This could be simply a ploy saying, hey, we might just go a whole new direction, which gets the music companies to backpedal and say, hey, we'll just stick with what we got going on. 99 cents is great. Let's just sign another 5-year deal. They might figure that's all they can get.
Do you think he really wants it to be DRM free?
I don't think he cares. I just think he wants a business model where he's in control and he gets to set the rules, and he's worried that the record companies are going to, you know, they're going to start to exert their influence and feel their oats. I mean, they made these deals, you know, quite some time ago, and you know, nobody really knew what was going to happen. Now everybody's saying, hey, I like my apple pie, but oh, that's another apple pie I could have a piece of. And I think that that's actually got more to do with it than the European thing. I do think it helps satisfy, like you said, I think it helps satisfy the interest in the European movement against Apple's, you know, proprietary system. And I do think it creates a new scapegoat, as you suggested, that being the record company. But I think that's actually got less to do with it than the money negotiations that they're involved in. That's my personal opinion.
It definitely puts it, I think it definitely puts them on backpedaling. It leaves the record companies backpedaling. You know, they're now on the defense, you know, they're now hunkering down. They're no longer, we saw them puff up their feathers a lot and talk about how they're going to expect more from Apple in the next round and da 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 da. Now they're mostly just trying to defend DRM. What do you think, Merlin?
Well, I said this on Twitter the other day, but I think that it's a classic piece of Steve in the sense that he's done two things here. One thing is he's regained control of the conversation, and he's so good. I mean, it's a metonymy, I guess, for Apple in some ways. Whoever actually wrote that and put it up, and it might have been Steve. I don't know. It's not the point. The point is that they've regained control of this conversation in the public forum and have basically thrown down. It's a hilarious kind of offensive move that they're so good at, which is to everybody's over here having this conversation. Then he suddenly throws down the gauntlet and then steps away and lets everybody fight it out, which and however he comes up, he'll probably be smelling like a rose, you know? Right. I don't know. I don't know about the negotiating stuff. What are you gonna say?
Now, here's the question I have for all of you is that Steve's talking about no DRM. The record, you know, he's got the record companies going, you know, is backing up. He's
just
finished a deal. EMI is talking about releasing a large portion of their catalog, DRM free. The record companies, I think, understand, some of them understand that DRM is kind of a dead end for them. It's a mess. It's a big mess that they're not going to be able to get out of. But the other thing that's interesting is this whole Beatle agreement mixed in with all of this whole conversation, which is that Apple no longer needs to go through with Apple. The problem they had is they couldn't sell the music. They could be sellers of the music, and that was what was up there, but they couldn't be the label themselves. The question is that with all of this talk going and with Apple lining up with lining the Beatles up and getting that all out of the way forever, could Apple start direct publishing for artists themselves?
Well, of course. Look at the popularity of the iPod Shuffle. So imagine you being able to go into a store, pay $79 and get a shuffle that's preloaded with a band's new album. For example, the Red Hot Chili Peppers or the new U2 album or the new Styx album.
Well, and this isn't that far off when you look at the Bare Naked Ladies. The Bare Naked Ladies are selling, they'll sell you a stick. This is like Scott's favorite band, I think. They'll sell you a USB stick, a thumb drive with all of their with whatever that album is, and people are paying it. They're happily paying it.
But that doesn't play. You can't stick headphones into that USB player.
This is the next thing,
and I think this is with the idea of different colors and the idea that you could actually badge those things as your favorite band.
Here's an idea: your one of Merlin's favorite bands, like Styx, for instance, and you you decide that
especially the middle period Styx.
You decide
before they totally let Dennis take over.
You decide that you really don't like your record company anymore, and your deal's up.
Right,
and you call up Jobs and you go, "Hey, I got an idea," and then the kids in the band next door that are about to start a new record contract with the same label go, "Now, wait a minute, Styx left them. Maybe I don't need them." And all of a sudden, you get new and old artists gravitating towards Apple. I mean, look what they did to retail.
Right.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember
that's the bigger question.
When you went into a computer store in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. And paid a lot.
You bought a Mac Apple from somebody other than Apple.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't compete with their dealers. Then they just kind of ran their dealers out of business.
This is actually a fascinating topic. I'll just give a little, I shouldn't give too much of a peek, but I did an interview with a friend of mine the other day who's a pretty successful, he's a successful indie rock performer. And he was saying that the next record that he puts out, they're not putting any money into print publishing, into print ads at all. Which is, if you think about it, that's a pretty big step for somebody to take. Because, you know, what he's saying all of this stuff, this is John Vanderslice. So he's saying all of this stuff that people are spending all this money on. You spend $2,000 to get a little Aladdin magnet. You do all this graft to get yourself on the end cap at Tower or wherever, or Virgin.
Tower doesn't.
And I understand that, but the point of it is, so what is a label great for? What a label is great for is taking somebody like Michael Jackson or Britney Spears or somebody and pushing them through the machine in a really big way to say, I'm going to throw such a huge amount of money at this because I want to hit the very fattest end of the curve. But the question like you're describing for the Styxes or whoever of the world, I think that's a really interesting question. Like, what do you do when a label doesn't want you and you don't want to have to get into the plastic disc business?
Look at Jonathan Colton.
Here's
a guy who recently on his blog compared himself with a band that had been signed. And the band that had been signed were actually touring. They were making like $1,500 a month.
There's Dresden Dolls.
Yeah. And he was like...
Who are like a pretty well-known indie band.
Yeah.
They're pretty well-known and signed.
And signed. But he was like...
They have like a record deal. They have a record deal. They're a professional band.
They're a professional band. And he's like, I make way more money than that.
They make $1,500 a month.
Yeah. Tiny amount of money.
My example is from Pittsburgh, the Affordable Floors. They were signed by Universal in the early 90s, had a great album, great single called Wedding Ring. And, they're really, really great guys. And Universal went through a shift. You know, they went through this restructuring and the album got locked up. You know, and basically
they're still under contract at that time. They can't do anything.
They can't take the music that they recorded and take it anywhere else. They're not going to release it. They're not going to promote it. And that's the real risk, is 80% of the bands that go into the machine. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this last week. 80%, when I worked for Sony Music, I knew that 80% of the people who were, I wasn't A&R, I was promotion, but I was afraid of sending people you wanted to do it because it was Sony Music. It was one of the big four. And it could be their ticket out. But the problem is 80% of the bands that signed, you know, this was the end of their career. I mean, as a musician, you know, they were literally going to be locked into Never Never Land, never be able to do anything with their content, and never get anything out of it. You know, they'd be in hock. I mean, this was something we talked about on TWIM a little bit, was this, you know, Courtney Love's long thing that came out in 2000. I guess we didn't talk about that.
We did actually. It was on the bill.
Courtney Love in 2000 left this, did the math for people, you know, of how an indie band gets started. Sell your soul unless you get to like, you know, millions and millions and millions of copies.
You're bankrupt the whole time.
Yeah.
The conventional wisdom, we should probably wrap back around to actual Mac stuff, but the conventional wisdom on a lot of this stuff, if you talk to anybody who does this for any length of time, is the only serious money, dependable money, a lot of, let's say, authors and independent musicians, is on back catalog and like having enough stuff out that it starts to build up. Eventually they call it earning back. You earn back over time, whatever your advance or whatever thing was, and all the production costs, all of which the bands are paying themselves.
Right.
Right? I mean, it isn't like whatever record company comes along and waves a magic wand and videos get made. That comes out of your pot.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't always know that, but
now there is still a value to management and some of what the record company brings, only because, you know, there's a lot of artists who by themselves are not going
to. Here's what it comes down to. Artists don't want to be merchants, right. But at the point when the people who are merchants on their behalf no longer have a lot to offer them, there's certainly a point where you've got to look at, you know, whether you could do an analogous job on your own.
Well, it's just like Mac users don't want to be IT professionals, right? They want their Mac to work. They don't want to have to configure the server. They don't want to have to mess with the back end. They just
An artist, typically, they want someone to write them a check.
One just super quick last thing on this, though. What do you make of the thing Steve said that I thought was kind of interesting? What do you make of him saying, okay, well, then why don't you put DRM on CDs? Because the thrust of his point was...
They would have if it had existed.
But his point is that you guys are all worried about people stealing your music, and yet every CD you put out is completely clear.
Okay, well, this is one of the failings of DRM on CDs. Is back in 1993, when they came up with hybrid CDs, so you could have a data track.
Is that Redbook now?
Yeah, well, no, it's a data track. So like an ISO 9660 or a hybrid of that, which is a... 9660 and a Mac track. Okay, so if you put that CD into some kind of CD players, older CD players, you would play the data track and you would actually ruin speakers because it would go and that whole noise would be damaging. So they had a huge backlash of that. So there was like, that was the death of data track CDs. And so if you add the idea that we're going to now have DRM'd CDs, when everyone's like, but I have a CD in my car.
And you try to play it in your car and it won't fit, or it won't play.
And so they've already told everybody, here's this great new format and we're going to put it in everything and we're going to have 250 million of them around the world, or around California anyway. And suddenly you can't play the music that you buy in the store. They would have got the big finger from everybody.
And this has been the bottom line of what Apple's made possible and what everyone else seems to have trouble with. As soon as people go, I can't play the song, whatever service they're using is worthless. I mean, I got started to get frustrated with iTunes when I had enough computers in the office that I had accidentally registered 5 computers and suddenly I can't play the song. And that is when I stopped buying every, I started, you know, when iTunes first came out, I was buying songs.
And then
you know,
look,
oh, this is fine. And suddenly I hit the wall and went, okay, I'm going back to CDs.
And then,
you know, it just wasn't worth it.
And then look at the Sony debacle from last year where they put the rootkit on the CD.
That was so crazy. Like,
well, let's bring this all back to Macs. And where I think this might be relevant is this. If Apple were, and this is just fantasy on our part at the moment, but if Apple were to get into the music publishing business directly and compete with the record companies because the record companies get to be somebody they don't want to deal with, the benefit to end users might end up being cheaper songs, because if Apple doesn't have to pay, the word is they pay the lion's share, that 99 cents, to the
record companies. I don't think so. I think the songs stay the same.
You think they wouldn't give them any?
No, because Apple doesn't like it being confusing. They don't want you to think about it. So Apple's going to want it to be $99. Apple will just make more margin.
99 cents.
99 cents. $99. Yeah, exactly.
That would be what the labels want.
Well, yes. But what I think is interesting is Apple is really poised to really have a vertical market, which is this is like Krupp's level vertical market, which is that I'm sitting there as an independent producer working in GarageBand that came with my iMac, and I'm just a little artist that I got it. And instead of saying publish to iTunes, it says publish to iTunes Music Store. Like, literally, I can go straight from GarageBand or straight from Soundtrack or straight from Logic. And literally,
it's associated with your email address and
or whatever. I set it up. I have to register an account, and I can send that song and make it available. Even like send it out to the RSS or whatever. That is a incredible
iTunes marketplace.
Exactly.
If somebody figures out how to do that, that's the next eBay, the next YouTube. That's the next really big deal. I know that Apple hasn't done that yet, because the touch that's involved in doing that and keeping track of millions of micropayments.
That's what Apple doesn't want to do. That's why they're happy for City Baby to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you manage the micropayments. Apple doesn't want to deal with anything where they're...
But if someone came up with a system that would allow you to tie all that stuff together, and Apple became a publishing company, and then we created music and we set it out through GarageBand or whatever, that could be brilliant. That could be big. That could change the way everything works. And that could take the power away from the RIAA and their evil minions.
Well, and I think that the thing that the RIAA still brings to it, and I think the thing that we have to figure out around, it's not just making the music, it's also how do I make sure people actually know that I made it? You know, and that's the thing that's still...
Well, that's where the label's supposed to come in.
And that's where they do come in. I mean, I'm not saying that there's not other ways around it, but they still come in and they still spend a lot of money and they still do a lot of things and they pull a lot of strings. I mean, I used to be the person that pulled them for them. You know, there was still a lot of things got on the radio because I knew a guy and, you know, I took him out to dinner once a month. And
well,
the short tail works. There was no blow.
No nose candy involved.
No, none of that.
The short tail
posters, though.
The short tail does work. The problem is getting into the short tail is so tough. The long tail's easier.
Right.
And the filtering and all that other thing, I mean, that's another issue. But I think that this is a very interesting discussion, only because being older than anyone else on the panel, I've seen this happen over and over in different versions through the years, where one company has gotten started in a industry where they ended up branching into all the other parts of that industry and basically dominating it. And
well, and I think that this wasn't possible until Apple solved its issues with the Beatles. You know, I think that a lot of the stuff, you could see the stuff moving, but it wasn't there like clean. It wasn't a clean shot until then.
Can I talk about something else that just came onto my mind?
Let us know, Scott. Tell me about your mother.
It's sort of, I have to say, iPhone related, but it's relevant because
you may take a drink.
Now, we went a long time in the show before I said iPhone, but this is sort of on topic, because did you guys hear that Apple is in talks allegedly with Electronic Arts to develop games for the iPhone? We have not heard any definitive word about games for the iPhone.
Where did you hear this?
from a reliable source.
Jeez, here we go.
And
friend of a friend of a friend.
No, come on. All of my iPhone predictions have generally been pretty spot on, so I'll defend that and say...
All of them?
All of them have been pretty spot on. I said pretty spot on.
See, I think it would be easier for you to say a lot of them have been
true. Okay, a lot
of
them have been pretty spot on.
We could acknowledge the fact you're basically throwing darts in the dark. And eventually one of them is going to hit somebody in the ass.
This has been reported by a major Wall Street analyst, my friend.
Oh, it's an analyst.
At a Wall Street firm.
On Wall Street.
A Wall Street firm.
Okay.
And it infected Apple stock price the other day. So it's relatively reasonably true. And I just think that what could be interesting to maybe morph these conversations together is what if Apple allowed you to publish your own games to the iPhone using this same model where they had the iPhone marketplace and you could be a content creator that was offering your own games and your own ringtones and all kinds of stuff that can move on that same pipeline.
I think Apple's definitely going to allow you to develop your own applications, your own games, and your own music for the – well, I don't know about the music, but your own games and applications for the iPhone. But you're going to have to go through them at every moment. You know, I think that's the cost. Is that Apple will
they want
make
their
that
cut.
Available? Well, I think they want
the
cut. They're, they
I
also
think
do
quality
want,
control.
I think it's more quality control than their cut. Yeah. You know, in my opinion,
the Worldwide Developer Conference got announced.
It did.
Yeah, June the 10th through the 14th,
and we'll be there.
And you, what do you think is going to happen at the Worldwide Developer Conference?
I know what's going to happen.
I'm going to take a wild guess. I have to say it again. The iPhone is going to be
shipping.
It's going to be story number.
And if it's,
that's
if it's
be
shipping,
story
will
number
you buy
two.
Us? Will you buy us a phone?
Mm.
Oh, so
you know what, Alex?
Big
Alex,
words,
just
big words when it was Macworld.
Don't even,
now,
don't
now,
even give
now.
Him the attention. This is he's just that's just that's what he craves. Don't even give him
it's
the
fine.
Attention.
All you guys made fun of me forever about the iPhone, and now you all want one. Sure. Oh yeah, now it makes.
I want my free one that I was promised.
Just make sure you're not listening to it on New York streets.
That's
yes,
see this?
Because you could get a ticket.
$100 fine. So,
well, it's proposed. It's yeah, not. It's
okay.
Not for real yet.
I'd like to do some name calling too. The New York State Senator Carl Krueger is expected to introduce legislation. Okay, that would impose $100 fine for people who continue to use their electronic gadgets such as iPods, Blackberries, and video games while crossing the street.
But did he specifically mention the iPhone?
He didn't, but I have a feeling that it's anything with headphones in your...
Third way to sneak it in so far. Mm-hmm.
That's good. You may take another drink.
The idea of nanny laws, and this is continuous throughout our government, where everyone goes, there ought to be a law.
Yeah.
You know, there ought to be a law against using iPhones in a car. There ought to be a law against using iPhones while crossing the street. There ought to be a law while using iPhones in an elevator. There ought to be a law about using iPhones in the restroom, as we saw from that phone guy the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, but this is like trying to stop suicides by outlawing bloodstains on sidewalks. It completely misses the first of all, it's very difficult to social engineer human behavior.
Right.
And this is just the most transparent kind of stupid. Oh my gosh, listen to me, I'm a pundit. The most transparent kind of stupid jackass move. It's for headlines. It's ridiculous.
If you watch people crossing the street in San Francisco, they don't look both ways before crossing the street.
San Francisco's a little different.
But the idea being is that they've been told that they are safe. That
we have
the
see in San Francisco.
Right away.
Every city has a different pact
right.
between pedestrian and driver. Every city it differs. And in San Francisco, I think the pact is that like as long as we stay out of the crosswalk when the light is green, they need to be cool with not hitting us.
Right.
Whereas in New York, apparently, it's every man for himself.
In San Francisco, you don't even have to do it. I mean, you go to Tenderloin.
In San Francisco, you can slam on people's cars and throw quarters
just
at them.
Walk slowly during the green. You're now no longer a pedestrian that has any kind of rights. And in San Francisco, you can just kind of walk slowly and stare at the cars and even yell at them while they're trying to get around.
Actually, in San Francisco, we hiss. We're a big hissing town.
Yeah.
Hate crime.
The strategy is to move in a group.
Oh, that is good.
I'll tell you where the strategy to move in a group is. We're doing a little bit of a rat hole.
Rat hole? You want to take a drink?
In Mumbai.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, in Mumbai, you always make sure that there are at least two people on each side of you, and then you just wait for them. You know, they know what they're doing. You don't know what you're doing. And you just wait for them to start running across the street because there are no stoplights and everyone just is going. And then they just move in. And they just move in as a group. It's like little schools of fish. Like you just go. And as soon as we all go, it's too many for the cars to hit and they'll stop.
Can we get rat hole music?
Rat hole.
We should have a little theme song.
We need a rat hole theme
song. I will do
anyway,
a rat hole theme
anyway.
Song.
I would like to challenge
But I guarantee for a long period of time, I'm still going to be able to wear my headphones, my iPhones
in Mumbai. I did not read the whole article. I've just seen the headline. I mean, so what is
some
what
guy got killed in a crosswalk?
One person got killed, and so the thrust of this is now everybody has to.
Just another example of your government working hard to make you work harder.
Actually, you know what it is? It's the MacGyver effect.
Mm. How's that?
There was a show on called MacGyver.
Oh,
this,
really?
This guy would.
There was this guy.
There was this guy. Because uh-huh.
you're too
things.
Young, Merlin, to actually
he
remember
make
MacGyver.
Out of toothpicks.
I'm so much older than you think I am.
Quit this. I didn't have anything to do with. I was talking in case our listeners.
I remember Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. They would come out, and it was a puppet show. Very enjoyable to watch, and there'd always be a lesson. And one of them was a dragon. There was a dragon, and there was a lady.
Let
I don't remember
when,
what the other. I don't remember what the other puppet was, but they were on the television. Sometimes they were on the radio, but I didn't like it as much because I couldn't see the puppets.
You know, I'm such a MacGyver guy that I carry solder in my wallet.
I was. I was trying to explain for our listeners that may not be familiar with MacGyver.
MacGyver would every week get into some kind of a situation where he would get out of it by stuff that was available.
Right. So in the military. What would happen is some genius that runs like the stockade would watch an episode of MacGyver and watch MacGyver use a toothpick to do something. He would then run through the military prison and ban all toothpicks. Because clearly that could be used as a security threat. And I have a friend that used to work at the military prison, and he would say, well, the latest MacGyver thing is, and then they would tell me something just asinine, but because, you know, this guy saw it on MacGyver. So that's what's happening in New York. One guy gets killed wearing an iPod. Mm-hmm. And we don't know, by the way, that the iPod had anything to do with it, but he gets killed. So now they want to make a law. And, you know, it's what I like to call the good intentions with bad effects.
You know who I blame, Scott? I'm going to join Patton Oswalt on this one, hippies. I blame hippies. That's hippies and children of hippies making laws, crazy frickin' laws that make no sense.
I think that the law should be look both ways before crossing the street.
I think the law should be you're on your own, whatever.
You know what I learned? I'll tell you what I learned. I learned in probably the first grade, and I still use it to this day every time I cross the street. You look to your left, you look to your right,
that's
and you
law.
Look to your left again. That's what you need to know. That should be the law. You got to look three times, and then you're good to go.
I think we should send an email campaign in New York with those pieces of advice. Send your letters to Attorney General at
I believe
New York.
The woman was named Fran, and she would talk to the dragon, who might have been Kukla or Ollie. I can't remember, but they were puppets. I do remember that. Maybe on television. It was a children's show, but
who
I enjoyed it.
What the heck are you imitating?
I don't know. That's not my usual Scott voice.
The kids are
that's not my usual Scott voice.
That's not me.
I can do it. I have a Scott voice, but
the
that's
kids
not
are
it.
Totally
Let's hear the Scott voice. I haven't heard
point.
The Scott voice. I've heard you do the Thurston Howell the Third voice.
You know, let's save it for another time. Okay. We're behind, I'm sure.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about much Mac news on this show.
So Microsoft does – I don't want to talk about Mac stuff. Let's talk about Microsoft. Microsoft slugs Mac users with a Vista tax. So evidently, according to the licensing, even if you can install Vista on Boot Camp – is it Boot Camp or just Parallels?
Parallels.
Just Parallels. So if you want to do – so basically you have
it's
to get
– it's the whole – what's it called? Virtualization.
Virtualization is only licensed in the higher end. So you really have to get the Enterprise Edition to be licensed to use the virtualization.
These are the voyages of the Starship Vista. Yeah. It's Chronicles' 5-year mission to get developed in a way that is not called Shorthorn.
To boldly decide which version I should buy.
I don't know. Spock. Spock. Why does it...
It's simply illogical.
Spock. Why does it...
You know,
right. That's the sound of about 10 skip buttons being hit.
There are now officially 1.397 million reasons not to run Windows on a Mac.
Well,
and that was 1.397 and 1.
You run it if you run it on Boot Camp, that's the deal. So I haven't done this. Boot Camp is where it's on its own partition, right?
Yeah, and that's still fine. You
Parallels
can use,
is the emulation thing.
This is a case of don't ask, don't tell.
Right.
You know, you can be – there's a lot of things.
I think Matlock might disagree. That
there's
sounds,
a lot of,
that sounds
there's
a, little...
a lot of things that we do on our computers that we don't tell anybody about.
I don't want to hear any more details, John. Thank you. Hey,
Scott,
I got,
Scott,
you know,
do you do anything on your computer?
No, nothing.
It's Christmas.
Here's what I think about running Windows. Here's what I think about
I
running –
I miss my wife.
It's Valentine's Day.
What's he doing with that flashlight?
It's a private joke that nobody knows, so stop. Okay. Here's what I would like to make an analogy that will resonate, I believe. If you want to run Windows on a Mac, and gosh, I can't think of why you'd want to do that, then if we were to look at the corresponding I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ad, you know what that would be like? I'll tell you what that would be like. The Mac guy would be standing there. the PC guy would be standing there, and a beautiful girl would be standing there to represent this thing of running Windows on a Mac, and she would be a transvestite.
We're going to get letters now.
No, you know, I might want to run XSI on my Mac.
No, there's a lot of reasons.
You know who needs the reason to do that is people who are on Windows right now. So a lot of the folks, I mean, what I'm hearing from folks is they're we've talked about this.
They want a Mac and they can't have one.
Well, I think what a lot of people are saying is that there's this for it's been bubbling up for a long time that they've been kind of quietly thinking. You quietly think that they've been thinking.
You can't. You know,
I'll see you outside, buddy.
You still get some industry standard tools.
But you got people who are saying, you know, I'm ready to make the switch, but I have these apps that I still need to be able to run, whether that's my favorite sound. You know, processing thing or Outlook or whatever, right? Or I can only log in. How many people do you know who are like, oh, I've got to have ABC software to log into this place?
But, you know, these people, this is like eating Chef Boyardee and saying you went to an Italian restaurant.
It's a fact of life. For instance, QuickBooks. QuickBooks is available on the Mac or the PC. But QuickBooks really is unusable on the Mac. It is not stable. I'm gonna get letters for that. but the thing is that we tested it here. So our financial officer here.
financial officer.
Your financial officer.
That's as close as I get. My wife, who runs the books. So she went through a lot of trouble with the QuickBooks to try to get it to work on the Mac.
Tomorrow's Valentine card will say, "Dear financial officer, I really love you.
I'd like to make...
I would like to give you a fiduciary responsibility.
So the thing is that she tested the whole thing with on the Mac, and the QuickBooks just wasn't stable, didn't work. It works great on a PC because that's where most people use it. No, here's the thing, is that she's sitting there with her Mac, and she does her entire life is on her Mac except for the financial books, which are on some PC that. And so the problem is, and there really isn't a lot of great competition with QuickBooks, you know, to do this kind of stuff at that size.
I understand.
And so what this is useful for is you run Parallels, you're able to have your QuickBooks running, and you only have to use a PC when you have to use a PC. You don't have to use it for the rest of
Buy
your day.
Buy a $400 Dell.
But the key
sit
is,
it in the corner and call it good.
But what makes this really work is being able to have that window open. You know, another example is we have a Pixel member who is an ABC, who ABC has some kind of convoluted, avid PC-only thing that tracks all the commercials that they're doing and everything that's running through. He has to look at it. The only way to look at that is on a PC. He doesn't want to have another box. So he has a Mac Pro. He's got a separate monitor dedicated to his Parallels that sits there, and he's able to, you know, watch everything
that's pretty
go by
cool.
while he's working. And it is amazing. It is the killer app to be able to do that. And Microsoft, you know, the bottom line is if you're going to do this, it's $100 more to do it right. The reason it's not don't ask, don't tell is because if you have trouble with it, if you have any kind of issue with it,
you're not going to have trouble with Vista. That's going to be fine.
If we keep this up, I just want to point one thing out. The next thing that will happen, because of the slippery slope, the camel's nose under the tent, cats and dogs will start living together.
It makes a huge difference. I have Boot Camp. I don't run Parallels. Because all the apps that I have need the graphics card.
Functional rat hole. If I wanted to run hypothetically Windows on my machine, what's the like most friction free way for me to do that? Is probably Parallels.
Parallels.
And how much space do I need to do that?
You need about 5 gig.
Oh, that's it.
Of dedicated space.
And Alex, what do you keep a big old chunk open on yours, right?
Yeah, it's chews up about, because I have all the apps installed and everything else, and all the thing, because I was putting graphics apps in, it's 30 gigs on my drive.
Can you resize it? Like in virtual PC,
I'd have to reinstall it in Bootcamp to do that. And I'm about to put a 160 gig drive in, you know, tomorrow. So
we're going to talk about that because I want the same thing.
Yeah, it's in a little plastic.
This is a hang up though, because I mean, I've got an 80 or 100 gig drive in mine, and I feel
Alex
that sucker
saw
up
my
very
solution
easily.
To the drive problem today.
I was over at Scott's house. Scott just moved here, and I know over at Scott's house. He's got like 8 of these little drives. He's got
into the cold room.
You know, so
I just have this whole thing on my just mountain of disk drives.
Who makes those drives?
They're G drives.
Oh, they're the G drives?
They're very nice.
This guy's got like 8 of them all stacked. He just keeps on buying a bunch of these little drives. I'm like, you know, you can get like a rack.
We need to talk about the Infrant NAS drive.
Yeah, he's got a thing.
Let's hear about it.
Yeah, well, no, we won't.
Okay.
So the only thing I've been looking at is this bracket that you can use to take the CD-DVD player out of your Mac. You put the bracket in, and then you've got 160 gig drive as the second drive.
That's nice.
Because I,
in a laptop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. And I the thinking is that I rarely use my DVD player. I just don't use it as much.
That's actually from Popeye. It's the wimpy effect. It's where they
no
say
DVD player and no phone.
Tuesday.
No DVD player, no phone. Well, no, okay. I use the DVD player once in a blue moon. So. You know what? My fake phone, the phone that I have.
Your little electronic computer phone?
Yeah. I left it on Bart the other day.
Oh, no.
Oh. I got this. Yeah, I got that email saying my phone number that didn't exist doesn't exist.
Yeah. The phone that I had from Los Angeles that was a only in case of emergency and using in walkie-talkie mode got stolen.
It was so bad.
Got left.
That's all I have to say.
Okay. Time for our picks then.
Are we already up to our picks?
We're at the picks. It was a slow week.
You can go last if you're not ready.
I'm so not ready. No, I'm totally ready. I just want to let you guys go first.
John, question.
Well, I've been doing a lot of other podcasts lately, working on them. I have this really great new podcast.
How long has this been going on? My God, John, it's Christmas.
Christmas.
I'm sorry. Let's start.
John,
tomorrow's Valentine's Day. So I've been looking at alternate ways of using, doing recording without having to use Soundtrack or Cubase or...
I like those.
Or...
You know, Cubase LE is free. Cubase, I'm staring at it right now.
Well, but it's not free. You have to buy some kind of gear, and it doesn't...
Which you're going to do because you're going to be recording.
Yeah, well, I'm getting this other piece of gear. I mean, this other piece of software that I like very much. And it's called... Mountain Tanks from Battery Acid Games. No, that's not right.
What is it called, John?
It's called Boom Recorder.
Boom?
Boom, as in...
Boom.
Boom, as in... it's from, believe it or not, VOS Games, and it's pretty cool. A couple of things. You can control it by using an Apple remote. So that pretty much useless remote...
That's kind of interesting.
That kind of useless remote control that you get... That, I don't know, I've never used Front Row for anything other than just demonstrating it from 30 feet.
It does make a cool demo for your friends.
It does. Like, look, I can control my Mac
from
30 feet.
And then let's go back to work.
So anyway, you can use the remote control to record, pause, rewind, increment the track. It keeps track of takes, so it'll automatically increment that stuff.
Up to 10 tracks?
Up to 10 tracks at a time. In demo mode, it works only with 2 tracks, which is fine for... doing the one-on-one recordings.
How much is it?
It's not very much money for 2 tracks, $30, and it's $260 if you want to fork over for all 10 tracks.
It looks pretty
cool.
Is
there an in-between? Is it like $30 per 2 tracks?
No, it's just, it's either
pro or basic.
Yeah, it's either pro or basic. Gotcha. And okay. So if you're the cool thing about it is you get 2 discrete tracks. Oh. Unlike in QuickTime Pro, where if you're doing recording, you've got to make sure your mixer is fanned out over to the right, and then
panned
out
left and right.
Yeah, pan left and right. So you've got to remember to do that. Otherwise, you get one track, and it's worthless for doing that. So you don't have to remember to do the pan left right. You get the discrete tracks. It has a couple other things that are really cool. It has better meters than the QuickTime meters. You can do RMS hold.
So the meters are really these look like the standard pro. They're the core audio meters, but they put nice little clickies in it. They put the little lines, so it makes it look much more accurate than it actually. I mean, it's accurate, but
Well, because if I record
like a regular clock with more lines on it,
if I'm recording in GarageBand, I basically get this one meter, and it feels really slow to me, and it's really small, and it doesn't really give me the info that I want. And if I'm watching the wave,
we don't have any history. Other thing.
If I'm watching,
I like a meter that you can see, like where after you've made changes, you can.
So if I'm watching the waveform history, if I'm doing pan left right, one of the channels is going to look correct, and the other channel's not going to look correct because of the way that stupid thing draws. Anyway, it's annoying. Plus, you can name all the channels in advance, so you don't have to worry about when you go to.
And where is this available, John?
It's available from
VOS Games.
VOS Games.
.nl.
.nl.
The
30-day demo. So
also, it can jam or continuous sync against timecode.
Yeah. Timecode is less interesting to me.
I like it.
I know, but...
It makes me happy.
Yeah, that's what I know.
It looks cool. I'm actually going to try it. Yeah. I'm going to download this and give it a shot.
It's something that I... You know, it's basically lightweight, and it's better than QuickTime Pro. Although...
I'm actually interested, because I have to admit, I have, there's no love lost here with Cubase.
We like Cubase, but...
I don't. But, okay. I said that to give you a hard time,
it's
but
a
I really
pain,
don't.
It's a pain to install.
It's a pain to set up.
It's a pain to use because we've lost stuff before.
Well, we've lost. I've only lost stuff once, and when I didn't realize what I was doing. But
well, the biggest thing is that Boom Recorder does not use the space bar to stop.
Off with
this
their
was
heads.
This was a problem for Alex on a twim.
That's weird.
I hit the space bar and it stopped recording, and I just hadn't realized.
A pretty wide convention.
Yeah. Now we know why there's no computers allowed in the studio.
Well, no, Alex still has.
I still have my. No, this looks really great because right now my big problem is that we use Cubase LE because Soundtrack doesn't do multi-track and. Yeah.
It's a great big bummer, and maybe they'll fix that in the next version.
Hopefully. The Boom Recorder, though, looks like it would be a great solution for grabbing that stuff. I have to admit, I'm stuck with Cubase right now because I know it's solid, and it'll do it every time, as long as I don't hit the space bar. Scott.
My pick is not a piece of software. It is a piece of hardware, sort of. It's actually a beanbag, so it's not particularly hard.
It's an iPod beanbag.
It's actually called an Omnipod. And you can find it at http://omni-pod.com. And I've been playing with this thing because I have two uses for it. One, it's like the world's easiest to transport camera holder because you don't have to have a big tripod. This little beanbag thing will fit almost anywhere. You screw your camera onto it, and you've got the stability of shooting with a tripod, but this thing will fit in your pocket. And it has a non-slip surface. Boy, that was easy for me to say. A non-slip surface on it, so you can put it anywhere. It doesn't fall off. And it has the camera mount built right into it, so it's very solid. So I actually walked around and like stuck it on top of cars, on top of garbage cans, and you got a rock-solid shot. You could shoot like a 15th of a second.
Is it heavy?
It's not particularly heavy. That's what I liked about it.
Where's the stability coming from?
It just comes because it dissipates the energy of the camera over these little beads inside the beanbag.
So why wouldn't I just go to Jeffrey's Toys down the street and buy a beanbag?
You could, but it wouldn't have a camera tripod mount screwed into it, and it has this special surface that doesn't slip around. It's only $30. It's not terribly expensive, but how I use them, and some of you guys may have seen me doing this, I use it to support my little pocket digital field recorder. Because you get this thing called handling noise. You may have experienced that, Merlin.
I experienced that with the Zoom.
You're holding these little pocket field recorders, and you're passing them around trying to get an interview, and you hear this handling noise. If you screw one of these things to the bottom of your handheld recorder, you grab onto it by the beanbag, then you can move it around, and there's no transference of any kind.
Just grab it by the beanbag.
That's right, by the beanbag. Now, you can also just set it on a table. And you have a nice, solid platform. So I use it for music. I use it for photography. It's called Omnipod, omni-pod.com. It's about $30. You know, if you're interested in photography and you want a simple way to put your camera someplace and take pictures with low light, or if you want to do digital field recording, that is my pick. And
actually,
I'm sticking with it.
Cool thing is about that is that you can actually not draw attention to yourself when you're trying to photograph stuff. Well, one of the dumbest things you can do is set up a tripod because that's like, notice me.
It's well, also you know. It's also San Francisco law. Yeah. If you put down a tripod, you need a
it in a truck.
My friend Ben Durbin told me this.
You can drive around in a truck with a tripod, and it's
so
not
if Ben and I drive around in a truck, we can go anywhere.
And you can stop, and it's all frozen.
Hey, Alex, can we have a truck?
There are lots of places that ban tripods because of liability concerns. Like, there's a great place that you can shoot butterflies down in Florida. It's a garden full of like a zillion butterflies, but they've got about 92 old ladies that are volunteers there, and they strip search every person 12 times for tripods. I mean, there were no tripods allowed, but you can bring in the beanbag, and you're cool to go. So
butterflies and strip search by an old lady, where do I sign up?
Speaking of Valentine's Day.
It's Christmas.
Merlin.
My software pick is the Airport Utility, which shipped with my Airport Extreme that arrived yesterday.
Wow, it's that good.
That is so late.
Yeah, I know. I didn't have software, so I got an Airport Extreme, and I you know actually the software is really good. I've got to say,
this is the N enabler.
It's the Airport Extreme with N that they've just started shipping, and mine arrived yesterday. Like I say, the well, I'll tell you what I like about it. One reason I got it, I'm still trying to figure out. I was getting 14 megabits per second with the WRT54G and on my cable, and then I hooked this one up, and I was getting like 2.5. So I think I need to rejigger. But I will tell you this: here's what I love.
Why
about
does that make it a great app? That's what I'm asking. You're trying to recommend a great app here, and you're saying I did
this,
it.
If this were a piece of text, you'd see that I'm at the beginning third of a paragraph. So if I could just. Just if I could go ahead. Right. No, the reason I like it is that what's nice about it, though, is it's easy to configure. Now, this is the kind of thing that makes John roll his eyes at me, but I found it very hard to get WPA working with my Airport Expresses over the WRT54. I know it's possible, but it's kind of hard.
Can we use just a couple of more initials and numbers?
Those are all sense. Actual. I actually know what all
this
means.
No, you have to download and install DD.
Here's what this means.
Download and install DD right, and then it will totally work.
I should work with the Sveasoft. I've just never got it working. Scott would have no idea if everything we did. Well, you got to get a new Johnson rod. Problem is your flugelhorn doesn't have enough
valves,
eclectic fluid. So you're going to want to go ahead and drain that all the way down and bring in the WPA for the drill down on that. But I'll tell you why I like it is it's very easy to configure for up to 2.5 megabits a second, 1/6 of my former bandwidth. But I'll work that out. But it's very easy to configure Airport Expresses, of which I have 4. And it's in the graphical interface for the airport utility is really nice. I got to say, this unit's beautiful. It's the same kind of, I guess, rough. I haven't seen the airport. Apple TV or anything, but it's that same kind of Mac Mini kind of
six and a half inches with roundy corners.
That's right. It's very attractive. And one thing I should mention, it turns out it's not as many ports as I thought. One of those ports.
So this thing just continues to be a.
So in closing,
I'd like to recommend this, even though it kept on getting worse and less than I wanted.
Wait a minute. Wait. Let's just summarize for everybody why this is Merlin's pick.
Slower bandwidth.
It's slower bandwidth. Yeah. Number two, it has fewer ports than you thought.
Fewer ports than I thought it
did. Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, Scott, it's a lot more expensive than my other one.
It's a lot more expensive. Man, can I get 3 or 4 of these?
Yeah. And there's some more.
Oh, there's more.
So in closing, my pick of the week.
My Apple stock just tanked on account of you.
Oh gosh, you lose more than a day that I'll make in my lifetime. I'm not that worried. So anyway, it looks promising.
So Merlin's going to report back to us he's recommending
it
next week.
Can I just say one thing? I have been half understanding computers for 20 years. So I've come to realize how often it is the nut behind the keyboard, pilot error, as they say. So I'm sure it's a configuration thing on my part. Also, I upgraded to Cat 6 cables, which is speeding things up. I got this. Oh, you know what, John? We should talk about this offline.
Okay.
I got the gigabit switch.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Definitely sped things up.
Zoom.
And I went, and this is. Oh God, I'm having a brain fart.
So it probably would be a good thing to talk about offline.
I upgraded to they're saying either 5e or 6 for the cable. I went with 6,
right?
And I definitely was getting faster.
In the last 5 minutes, you've used more acronyms, model numbers, and since I've ever known you.
How about KMA? Can you guess what that one is? So speedtest.net is my new favorite place to go check your bandwidth. And so in getting my new switch up and my new, I used to use.
That's actually a great site.
Yeah.
I used to use Speakeasy.
And now, but here's why I love speedtest is it remembers your previous tests. And so you can kind of graph them over time. And boy, that was the most confusing thing I've ever. That was the worst recommendations ever. So anyway, my sucky router is easy to test. Hey, Alex, what's your pick of the week?
Banana.
KMA. I have one that is not quite. I'm you're going to be disappointed.
Uh oh. How many? What percentage
it's
of an Alex?
1/7 of an Alex.
$100.
$100.
What is it?
Mine was more expensive than Alex's.
Yeah. It's called Movie Logger, and I'm just starting to play with it. So I have to admit that I'm just digging into it, but it looks very, very promising.
So what? This keeps track of all the movies that aren't very good.
Yeah.
So is this a port of that old Newton app?
It is not as, I mean, the great thing about the Newton app was, and there was one for the Palm Pilot,
right,
where you could be sitting on set doing this stuff, getting time code live, right, and it was keeping track of all of that. And I don't think it does, you know, it doesn't do that because it's not on the live, you know, kind of the live process. But as I said, the big thing here is that you're going to want to, you know, a lot of this stuff, it can export to the XML, which means that you can bring a lot of stuff back into Final Cut. So, you know, and convert that data. The great thing, one of the great things, this is just an underlying thing. One of the big reasons that we use Final Cut Pro Studio for pretty much the entire pipeline here is specifically because of the XML backend. We will use an Apple app even when sometimes another app will, you know, we think might do a little bit better because I have that XML, which means, for those of you listening, XML is cool because it means it's a text document. The entire project file is a text document. If I want to write a Python script that says, change all this stuff, move the keyframes, do all this other stuff, I can do all of that stuff with a, you know, by just hashing through text. I don't have
to. And it's very modestly sized, pound for pound.
Yeah, I don't really care about the size. I don't care if it's 10 times heavier.
Opposed to the old days, or like even like an iMovie, where it's going to store all of your movie stuff in that one file.
And the big thing is, so anyway, by XML is like the magic bullet, and this thing supports that. And but what it lets you do is, as I said, you can go through, you can figure out what clips you want to keep, what you don't want to keep. It's a great way to you don't want to have Final Cut for your producer, for instance. We've got a producer that's working on our show. I don't want every person that needs to log to have Final Cut. And I also don't want everyone to be opening QuickTime and writing stuff down in FileMaker or trying to figure out how to... This is the
can
way
you actually
manage
like annotate this? Can you go like, this
That's
is the
you're
part?
That's what you're doing. You're annotating it. And it's keeping track of the
I'm
time.
Totally going to use this.
Oh, it is. It's nifty. Oh. There's another app called CatDV, which isn't too bad to doing this. I think this is a lot cleaner. I think the interface is cleaner than CatDV. I think CatDV is interesting because it will... CatDV will actually catalog enormous numbers of tapes so that you can always go back to them and find what you wanted, and it'll keep like low res versions and do a lot of that stuff. The issue is that we don't do that much anymore. We pull stuff off tapes and then we put the tapes somewhere in dry storage, but we're never going to open them again unless something really bad happens. And so having this stuff work through, and it's a nice clean interface. It is, as I said, I'm sure that a week or two from now I'll have all the things I don't like about it, but I just started playing with it, and I'm pretty excited. That's it.
Movie logger,
and the company that makes it is a company called Digital Heaven. And Digital Heaven makes a bunch of cool, like, they make a lot of stuff that's wrapped around taking advantage of this kind of stuff. So Final Print, which prints out the key images from an edit. Movie Logger, Final Cut, they have some Final Cut plugins. They have one called AutoMotion, which automatically builds lower thirds. So you have a database of like 60 people, and you have the template of the lower thirds, and you run it through it, and it builds 60 lower thirds like that. And if you want to change them, you change the database, change the lower thirds. Makes you very happy. That's it.
Well, speaking of exciting, Alex, March 28th, what's happening?
On March 28th, Scott Bourne, Leo Laporte, and myself will be at the Zeum. The Zeum, by the way, is right next to the Moscone Center. It's this beautiful theater, and we're going to be talking about podcasting.
And that's Moscone Center in San Francisco.
That's correct.
And we're going to do a conference. It's like a seminar, a three-day seminar. You are going to reveal secrets you have never, ever before revealed in public about doing video for the web and podcasting.
Pretty much.
Find out all of the companies that are dead to Alex.
So it is literally going to be a bleed from your ears kind of. When we put it together, it was just like, I was like, I don't even know if I could. You know, it's super dense.
Intensive.
And Leo, of course, being probably the most recognized podcaster, he's going to share a lot of stuff. I'm going to talk about audio. It's 3 days. It's $299. We've already sold like the first day 10% of the seats.
Yeah, it's moving pretty quickly. So
you can get information at PixelCore.
You can get information at PixelCore. You can also we're going to have by the time this show goes up, it'll actually be on twit.tv, and it'll definitely be in the show notes. We'll have a link to the main page, and it's being made possible by Poddango and BSWUSA.com. So
everybody stop by and say hi.
So it's not $700.
No, it's not.
It could have been.
It's less than half an Alex.
As
I said, it's really a lot of all the stuff we've been learning over the last 2 years of doing this.
And we're going to do some live shows.
Yeah, we're doing that iLife Zone show. We're going to be doing an episode of Mac Break, and I believe we're going to have Leo doing Twit with the guys. And it's great doing it in the theater. It's this gorgeous, super comfortable theater. We're really excited. So
it's kid-friendly?
It is kid-friendly.
How about that?
So,
unlike
this show, yes, this specific show. So,
this show is fine, just fine. Alex is going to cut out a whole lot of that stuff toward the end, and it's
I'm cutting nothing out.
They're going to complain on the forum, you know.
There goes the clean tag.
No, but
did we actually say anything? I don't think we did.
KMA.
That's not too bad.
A campground where you can go and,
that's exactly what that is.
And I didn't say the rest of it.
John, where can people talk to you?
If you want to talk to me, you have to go to twit.tv/forums. You have to pay $2, and you can type questions away.
Every time you say that, I imagine you being like a carnival barker who's like standing out front in a straw boater, like collecting a couple bucks from each person who wants to
come
in.
Well, you could also...
Come on into the forums. Come in and whine about the sound quality.
I thought more of a restroom with the guy with the little, you know.
Well, you could also go to my other new venture, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay. Oh.
You want me to?
We'll save that for next.
Come on, it's Christmas.
It's beerschool.com, where you can learn all about how you and your friends can learn to drink more than one kind of beer.
Finally, something you really know a lot about.
I know a lot more about beer than I know. No, that's not true.
John has a PhD in beer.
I should get
drinking.
An honorary degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my fault.
That's cool.
Well, I probably ought to mention my newest endeavor, AppleFoneShow.com. For some reason, people got the idea that the iPhone and me would make a great blog and podcast. So Chris Breen from Macworld Magazine is going to bring me regular news from the Macworld news desk about the iPhone, and I'm going to do a blog about it. We're going to have a show that launches in March. It's an audio podcast all about the iPhone. Now, some people seem to think that's what MacBreak Weekly is all about, but, you know, so we're going to reduce
our extend the brand, Scott. We got to extend the brand.
You know what? We're going to take the drinking game over to AppleFoneShow.com, and if you go
there, and John
there,
should do a thing together where we iPhones and beer.
Yeah, well, you know what? I know how to sync an iPhone.
There you go.
You need to fire your entire writing staff, John. Just top down. Just go in there and just clean out desks. I'm just saying. guys, you got to go.
Where can they find that?
AppleFoneShow.com. And the podcast will be available in March at Podango.com.
Merlin Man.
I closed all my sites this week. As you know, I have 119 websites. And you know what I said this week? I said, screw it. I'm closing them down. I'm shutting the doors.
That phone guy is gone?
All gone. Gone.
43 folders is gone.
I realized I've said everything that I wanted to say. I've repeated myself a lot.
MerlinMan.com.
That was the first one to go. Okay. That thing was dead weight. Blah, blah, blah. Here's me. Blah, blah.
Notice me. Hey, yeah. Look, I'm on the iPod.
Yeah. So they're all closed down. But anyway, yes. If you wanna find me, go to twit.tv and ask John to give me a call on his fake phone. Hey, Alex, where can people? You know, Alex, I get sick of asking you this question each week. I know the kids get sick of hearing it. When are you going to have some kind of an internet presence to which we can send people beyond one of those photos of you that somebody took on the Pixel Corp page? When are you going to start giving back to the kids
like
in the community?
AlexLindsayKMA.com.
The Pixel Core is my thing.
You should get on Twitter. Twitter would be the perfect medium for you.
No.
Dead to you?
Dead to me. I don't like to say it dead to me. I like to say DTM. I mean, I've now shortened it. It's just
DTM.
DTM. That we had trouble with free. We were trying to do a show with Free Conference Call the other day. And
is it DTM?
For the third time, I couldn't call through, and I just emailed it out. I didn't.
Is that worse than Skype?
I don't know. Actually, that's so bad. It's
Free Conference.
It's DTAOU.
Really?
Dead to all of us.
Yeah. Is that worse than Skype? What's worse, Skype? So dead to me throwdown. Free Conference Call or Skype?
This could be a whole show.
See, Skype is protected by the Leo aura. Mm-hmm. So I can't kill it off yet, okay. but free conference call is definitely DTM.
For those of you at home that can't see it, Alex does have a little Skype voodoo doll with pins in it on his desk.
You were so frustrated last week. You look so sad.
See, this is what happens when you use Skype. This little statue has its head cut off.
I don't like Skype. This has been Mac Break Weekly or something that resembles it. Break time is over.
Actually, we're broken.
So let me get this straight.
This one has been broken.
You guys are going to do a seminar with podcasters about podcasting, at which you're going to do a podcast.
Wouldn't it be more
fun?
Could
it be any better?
Well, you know what?
We're going to do it for 3 hours straight.
I have a suggestion.
3 days.